Jean Bethke Elstein is the Laura Spelman Rockefeller Professor of Social and Political Ethics at the University of Chicago. She's also the author of Democracy on Trial and Real Politics at the Center of Everyday Life. She joins us from member station WLPN in Nashville. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us.
My pleasure.
What happens to a society that, in an instant, it seems, feels itself vulnerable?
Well, that's going to be revealed in the days ahead. I think one of the things that happens clearly and that has been revealed about us is that beneath the surface of everyday pursuits in a highly individualistic culture, a culture that is given over to buying and selling, so to speak, one nevertheless saw extraordinary selfless and courageous behavior. People dropping everything, walking off their jobs to get to the sites of the tragedies in any way they could to put their shoulders to the wheel. People waiting in line 2 hours, then 4 hours, then 6 hours to give blood, and the spontaneous vigils around the country with a spirit of mourning and a spirit of compassion. Now, on the issue of our sense of invulnerability that has, I think, been permanently altered, one searches in one's mind for historic parallels. I was thinking of moments when I saw the scenes on television of people in military uniform patrolling our airports with automatic weapons visibly displayed. And I'm thinking, when have I seen that before? And I came up with a few times, a few moments. Frankfurt, Germany in the late 70s at the height of terrorist fear on the European continent. Warsaw, Poland in 1983 at the height of martial law when it was, so to speak, the bad guys who were the ones walking around with the weapons. And there's in the back of your mind a sense, thank God we don't have to go through that. We're Americans. This isn't the sort of thing that we will ever see. Well, we see it now. And I think it will really be a test of who we are as a people over the long run, to think of how we are going to respond. We do have to respond. I think it's absolutely clear. But how we respond will determine who we are over the long run.
What do you think then the best response could possibly be?
Well, I think the best response would be to do what the administration, I believe, is now doing. Take some time. Don't retaliate immediately. I'm very relieved that we haven't, that we're going to try to build a multilateral coalition. And the list of countries that have lost nationals in the tragedy is a long list. I've heard mentioned the United Kingdom, Korea, Japan, China, France, Germany, Ireland, Canada, Switzerland, India, and beyond. So it seems to me that given the multinational character of the attack, that building this multinational coalition is terribly important.
I'm trying to think back in history. Of course, Pearl Harbor was evoked,
yes,
but an act,
yes,
of war and the destruction at a military base in Hawaii. But I'm trying to think of other times when there has been such destruction on American soil. And the only thing I can come up with is the American South and Atlanta burning. Of course, we don't see,
yes,
the images of that, but it's part of the history. Can,
yes,
in terms of how these events of the past week might remake America, can we go back to that, to the Civil War, to the American South, and find lessons there?
The American South knew what it meant to have cities destroyed. If you look at pictures, photographs of Columbia, South Carolina, or of Atlanta, Georgia, after the Union bombardment, and you don't look too carefully, you don't look at all the historic features, the immediate image that comes into your mind is Berlin in 1945. No, it's the American South. Well, what were the lessons that the South might teach us? One, in fact, is a sense that has come through so powerfully in the writings of such great Southerners and Americans as William Faulkner and Flannery O'Connor and Walker Percy and Eudora Welty, a sense of history's ironies, of history's tragedies, of the fact that we have to at times deal with our inability to control events. That's terribly important. Our greatest president tried to teach us that. I don't think we learned the lesson. That was one of Lincoln's lessons during the Civil War, but that was lost, on those of us who did not experience historically, couldn't look back on a history of devastation and occupation. That's important. The other side of that, however, is a side we have to caution against, and that's a kind of rigid jingoism. You know, the South will rise again. They can't do this to us. Although the South couldn't restore the institution that had blighted its pre-war history, the institution of slavery, it did, in fact, rigidify, as we all know, into the system of segregation that it took a major national ordeal to extirpate. And that, I think, derived in part from that sense of wounded pride, and they can't force us to do what we don't want to do. Well, that, I think, is something that we can learn from and something we must guard against.
In an effort to protect its citizens, however, is it likely that America could indeed become isolationist?
It's always a danger when you've been assaulted in the most hideous possible way, when people have used your own symbols of freedom of movement, commercial aircraft, against other citizens. It's just horrific. We have a history of isolationism in this country that at times has spilled over into we've got to go get them. But as soon as we've gotten them, we step back inside the fortress. And that we have to guard against. We are part of the world. New York symbolizes that. We have to acknowledge the way in which we need to think about protecting our own citizens, even as we accept the fact that we can never guarantee 100% security for those citizens, for ourselves. We simply can't do it.
Given some of the terms that have been thrown around, jihad, holy war, crusade, as a student of medieval history, what about that aspect of it? I mean, do the Crusades come to mind, for example?
Not yet. But I would hate to see that language come into common play, because that is the language of triumphalism. That, again, is an episode in the history of Christendom that is looked back upon with deep, deep sadness. And what we've got to do is to respond to an attack that recognized no limits, because you're attacking the innocent in the sense that they had no capacity to defend themselves. You're attacking noncombatants. That violates all the known rules of warfare, all the ethics of war. We have to respond to that in a way that recognizes the ethics of war and abides by certain restraints. That will not only test our resolve, as the president has been saying, it will also test our capacity to think ethically about the use of force. And that is a very difficult thing to do when you have been wounded as deeply as we have been by the events of this past week.
What the president has been saying, as you said, you're glad to hear that, but the president indeed has been using words like hunting out evil, using the word war. What do you make of that?
I mean, well, the word war is entirely appropriate. It seems this was an act of war by any standard of international law, the United Nations Charter, all the conventions that I know anything about. We have to abide by limits, even as those who attacked us did not. So it's very important, as you're using the language of war, not to fall into a language that invites triumphalism. I think that what we saw on Tuesday was evil. It was evil. But to pose it as good versus evil, I think within that lurks the danger, you know, of a kind of limitlessness in our response. And that's something that even as we clearly label something that was evil, evil, we have to be very cautious about. It's, again, a very fine balancing act, and it will take all the restraint, the wisdom that our leaders and that we can bring to bear. And I hope we're up to this test.
Jean Bethke Elstein is the Laura Spelman Rockefeller Professor of Social and Political Ethics at the University of Chicago. She's also the author of Democracy on Trial and Real Politics at the Center of Everyday Life. She joined us from member station WLPN in Nashville, Tennessee. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Leanne.